This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm John Idstein.
And I'm Robert Siegel.
Today, another story from Lost and Found Sound's Sonic Memorial Project. Over these past months, hundreds of you have called our Sonic Memorial phone line with your audio artifacts and stories as part of this national collaboration chronicling the life and history of the World Trade Center and its neighborhood.
We begin some 80 years ago. Starting in the 1920s, the six-square-block area around Cortlandt Street in Lower Manhattan was a bazaar of radio parts, antenna kits, knobs, tubes. Metro Radio, Leotone Radio, Cantor the Cabinet King. For more than four decades, it was the largest collection of radio and electronic stores in the world.
Today, independent producers Joe Richman and Ben Shapiro take us back to the neighborhood that would eventually become the site of the World Trade Center. Radio Row.
It's impossible to describe the sound or the feel or the smell of the street. With a Frankfurter machine on the corner, on the other corner was a guy roasting chestnuts in the wintertime.
And the place was hopping. You had Wall Street not too far, so there was a lot to draw from customers.
And in those days, there was no anti-noise regulations. So they'd mount speakers above the entranceway.
I played classical music. Some of the others played jazz. Some of the others played different. It was a conglomeration of what you heard as you walked along the street. This was the most unique street and place that I ever lived. It was really an experience to have been there. When I retired, I used to sit and dream about the place.
Although you could buy almost anything here in Lower Manhattan, the great number of electronic shops in the neighborhood gave it the name Radio Row.
My name is Bill Schneck. My father was Harry L. Schneck, who started the first radio store on Cortlandt Street in 1921.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? Through the strains of Say It With Music.
Radio was a novelty. Most people were intimidated by it. You know, the idea of information coming through the air, through the ether, was something that, you know, it's one step away from black magic.
Now I have another experiment that will interest the radio audience. Just as you would connect up your own radio set, I have connected up the antenna of our amplifier to Mr. Young's wrists. You hear it?
Within a few years, people regarded it as the greatest thing since flush toilets. It started to pick up momentum. Cortlandt Street showed signs of life, and all of the nuts came out of the woodwork.
Edson Radio, Edley Radio, Leotone, Allied, Harrison.
My name is Si Denby, Niagara Radio News, Supply. We were one flight up on Greenwich Street, corner of Greenwich and Cortlandt. I had the largest stock of tubes in the nation.
My name is Irving Simon. The original store was Stewart's Radio. I was there for 25 or 26 years.
My name is Eugene Bland, but nobody knows me as Eugene Bland. It's Bland the Radio Man.
And another came, and another came, and another came, and like a mother gives birth, the street gave birth to several hundreds of these stores.
When you go to your dealer for a demonstration of one of the new 1936 radios, be sure to ask, does this set have genuine all-metal tubes?
Saturday was the big day. This is when everybody came down to buy parts and information.
They came down to buy, they came down to talk to each other, they came down to get ideas.
They were building transmitters and receivers and radios.
And they had all that type of stuff right out on the street. The street had tubes and parts, and they were all thrown together, and you had to pick them out looking for what you wanted, and maybe a tube that cost a buck you would buy there for 20 cents. You could find almost anything.
You were facilitating their daydreams, you know, of radio, and where could you go for radio stuff but Cortlandt Street.
No, I'm not sending a secret code. There's no secret about the RCA Victor Model A108. The beautiful, gleaming mahogany cabinet styled in the Regency period makes a handsome addition to any room. Look for the Victor A108 at your RCA Victor dealers, and you're sure you're going to buy it.
I started going down to that area. I was 13 years old.
You couldn't ask him a lot of questions. In other words, find what you wanted, buy it, and get out of my store. There are other people waiting.
They're all surly. You went there almost for the adventure of being yelled at.
A customer would come in and ask for something, let's say an audio transformer. And the salesman would say, well, I'm not sure I've got it in stock. I'm going to have to go down the basement to check. So the guy would start to make believe by bending his knees more and more that he was walking down a flight of stairs. You know, he'd make stomping sounds, turn around, and start coming up till he was full height again. And he'd tell the customer, well, you're lucky. I managed to find one. It's the last one I've got.
The way we look at it was kind of romantic. We were in a business of love. Every one of us loved the things that we did.
It wasn't just the street. It wasn't just some buildings. It represented a way of life. It represented upward mobility of the American spirit, interest in technology. All of that was incorporated into this radio row. You know, I could wax poetic about it.
This is Tom Dunn, Channel 2 News in Lower Manhattan. When the Port of New York Authority first announced the proposed construction of the World Trade Center, the brochure quoted from Walt Whitman, high growth of iron, splendidly uprising toward clear skies. To the Port Authority, the construction of the World Trade Center might have meant growth, but to many of the 300 small businessmen in the 13 blocks to be cleared for the center, it meant disaster.
All right, let me see if I got it. Yeah, October 8th, 1965, to World Trade Center site occupants. To permit construction of the World Trade Center, the Port of Authority has made application to acquire by condemnation the property which you occupy.
We were told 14 months from now, this building is not going to be here. 14 months from now, this street is going to be rubble.
And this is how it started. We said, well, we better hire an attorney and get some public relations to work on this thing so we can beat these guys.
And we felt by getting together with everybody that we had a chance. Every once in a while, the underdog wins. And we're fighters.
Yeah, we'd walk up and down the street. They don't let them kick us out. You all know us so well here. Help us try to stay and so on and so forth.
Mr. Nadell, you've been fighting fairly successfully for a goodly number of years now. How much longer can you go on?
The news media came and took pictures and interviewed some of the people. We were trying to do anything that we thought would help us.
We have a long fight ahead. The Port Authority has still won a battle, and they still have to win the war. And my personal opinion is we will win the war.
Everyone fought like crazy, the best way they knew how. But it was one of the impossible things. You couldn't fight the money. Couldn't fight the power. They rode all over us.
The little businessmen on Cortlandt Street have fought for 2 years in and out of court, but apparently to little avail. The Ajax Wrecking Company of Long Island City moved in its equipment today and began demolition of some of the first of 26 vacant buildings in Lower Manhattan. The construction of the $350 million World Trade Center may have taken another significant step. This is Tom Dunn, Channel 2 News in Lower Manhattan.
They cleaned out Cortlandt Street very quickly. Sidewalks were being eliminated. Cranes were taking material out of there as quickly as they could. My particular store was bulldozed. Big crane with a big ball, and they just knocked the whole building right down. Before you knew it, there was a hole there. There was heart rending, believe me. I try not to look back on those times because they were hungry times.
Those that could, they moved their shops. Some went to Chamber Street, some went to Canal Street, wherever they could find a shop. But a lot of them went out of business, period, just because they were just too old.
It was a colorful area. And quite frankly, I missed the color of that when I came out here. Yes, sir. Hiya. The name of our business is Edley Electronics in Levittown. 212 and Fry. We originally came from 154 Greenwich Street, which I guess was at the base of the left-hand corner of the World Trade Center. Of course, I'm talking about way before 9/11 took place. And as far as I know, I am the last remaining store retailer that was in the Cortlandt Street area on Radio Row.
Good luck again.
Take care.
My father started the first radio store on Cortlandt Street in 1921. So when they started to build the World Trade Center, I said to my father, who was retired by that time, I said, "Pop, I said, let's take a ride down to Cortlandt Street. I said, this is going to be your last chance to see the area before it's completely gone." So he said, "All right." And he put on a Mackinaw and his normal fedora, and we went down to Cortlandt Street. And he got out of the car, and I did. He didn't say anything at first, and then sort of took a gaze down the whole length of the street and then said, "Wow, it is totally gone." That was about the extent of the conversation. I had thought that it would affect him, you know, reminiscing about, I started Radio Row, now Radio Row is a thing of the past. No, it was a washout. It didn't interest him. Hell, he acted like a New Yorker. He took it in stride. Everything changes. Neighborhoods come and go. So, went back to the car and off we went.
Our report on Radio Row was produced by Joe Richman and Ben Shapiro with help from Eleanor Ostrinsky. The executive producers for Lost and Found Sound's Sonic Memorial Project are the Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva. You'll find more about the project on our website, npr.org. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.